Okay, thanks. Okay, well, thanks a lot for the invitation to speak here. And this is work joint with Eric Sharp. And this is a subject that we've heard about in Alan Adams' talk, and this has attracted some interest in the string theory community. And I was asked to speak about this, and I see mostly a mathematics audience, so this is great. I'll get to talk about this as mathematics, so I won't say very much about the physics at all. You heard quite a bit about that yesterday, and if you have questions about the physics, I'll be happy to incorporate that. So in a sense, this isn't, as a math talk, this isn't really ready for prime time, because I haven't, you know, if I were writing a math paper, I'd want to go ahead and prove more general theorems and do a more general case. But at least now, you know, we've done enough computations that we've seen that there's some evidence for these predictions of Adams by Luzzetti that we heard about yesterday. And there's, you know, a theory can be defined under some special assumptions. So it's reminiscent of how Gromov-Witten theory started as mathematics, that we started having some computations of these things that called correlation functions, which we knew nothing about, and then we gave some definitions of them in more and more general cases. Now there's a beautiful theory, and it's all history. So that's where we are. It's not clear, you know, back then it was very clear mathematically that Gromov-Witten invariants were going to be a fundamental object of mathematics. It's not quite clear what these new invariants are mathematically, but they appear to be invariants of varieties together with certain holomorphic vector bundles. So this is intrinsically interesting, and I don't yet know what it means yet. I'd also like to just say that mention the name of my student, Duncan Christie, who helped complete some of the computations recently, yesterday, that I'll be mentioning that. It's amazing what graduate students can do if you, you know, give them deadlines and inspire them to go ahead and finish now. This one thing that's really been great for me about learning about the culture of physics that I don't always hadn't really learned as a mathematician. Okay, so let me just give a review, a very quick review of Gromov-Witten theory, just in the context I'll need it. Because some of this is going to be the same in these 0-2 theories, and some of it will be different. So what we have at first is we have a moduli space. I was told to press hard. I guess I don't know my own strength. Okay, so we have this moduli space of, given a complex smooth projective variety, X complex a projective variety, we have a moduli space of stable maps. So we have a nodal curve of arithmetic genus G. With a bunch of marked points, and the homology class of the map is given by beta. And one of the key ingredients of this theory was to work out mathematically what we learned from physics, that there's a virtual dimension, that the that we take C1 of x dot beta plus the dimension of x minus 3 times 1 minus g plus the number of marked points, where here is x has dimension n. And from this, we got a virtual fundamental class which is a homology class with rational coefficients because of the stacking nature of this moduli space, and that we can go ahead and use this together with evaluation maps to go ahead and compute invariants. So the observables in the theory are the Durham cohomology classes, and we can take k different observables, and then we can compute correlation functions, and the instanton contribution of the correlation functions comes in genus G, and in any homology class beta, these are summed up as a, in a generating function, they're defined by use of the evaluation maps, which evaluate a map at each of the respective mark points. And we, as usual, pull this back, multiply them together, and integrate over the virtual fundamental class. And this is a rational number, and this is the Gromov-Whitman invariant. And these are the objects that we're trying to generalize. So the again we have this ingredient. These are going to be zero unless the sum of the codimensions. So let's say that the gamma I, or let's say PI homology classes, that the sum of the complex dimension of this homology class is equal to this virtual dimension. Otherwise, we get zero for dimension reasons. And the goal is not really to just generalize this using the data. The goal of our original project was to go ahead and use the string theory to go ahead and just see what string theory tells you how to compute these correlation functions, and then translate that into mathematics. So there's going to be a few places where I'll point out where there are natural mathematical definitions that one can make, but it's a little suspicious about whether this matches string theory or not. And the reason why I really want to match string theory, even though this is interesting for mathematics, is because the strongest evidence we have to date about the semi-topological nature of these 0-2 theories comes from physics. So I very much want to go ahead and take that, even though I can take calculations and verify that in examples. I want to go ahead and just stay with string theory as a guiding principle to try to go ahead and see what the correct final invariant is to define in the greatest generality possible. So this is Gromov-Witten theory, and what we'll inherit from Gromov-Witten theory is we'll still have the same moduli space of maps in any string theory. We're going to have the same space of holomorphic maps, but we're going to have different things that we integrate. So the evaluation maps are going to have to get modified to give a different integrand to compute for this problem. So that's what's going to change. And also, in Gromov-Witten theory, to go ahead and compute these invariants is notoriously difficult unless you have something nice like a torus action acting on X, or maybe X is a hypersurface in the toric variety, and you have some form of localization or virtual localization, and you can use that. And now the techniques are even harder here. So there are really very few examples that can be computed completely. So instead, let me remind you of a linearized version of Gromov-Witten theory. And this will be much easier to compute. So I'll follow Morrison and Klusser. And I'll just illustrate with the, for example, with the quintic threefold. So here, let's say that X is defined by f of X equals 0, where this is a degree 5 homogeneous polynomial in P4. For any d, we have the moduli space, the linearized moduli space of degree d maps, which we think of as a set of 4 polynomials on P1 of degree d. So in general, one might expect these to have no common factors, give us a well-defined map to projective space, but we just linearize and ignore that. Just mod out by scalar multiplication, and just take this as our moduli space, even though these may not be maps. There's also a physical model for these theories as well, and this is computed to be just a nice projective space, P5D plus 4. And then, so if we think of this as morally speaking being a map F, of course it's not necessarily really a map, we want to know when the map F factors through X. That will happen if and only if F of alpha 0 to alpha 4 is equal to 0. And this is a degree 5D polynomial in the variables of P1 when we substitute this in. And what that tells us then is if we expand this, it says 5d plus 1 coefficients. And because this is a quintic, these are each degree 5 in the p5d plus 4 variables. Okay, so this is our condition. So what we find is that the linearized moduli space of maps to a quintic inside P5D plus 4 is given as just a complete intersection. So if H is the hyperplane class as usual, it's the complete intersection of 5D plus 1 of these classes. So this is some threefold. And then to go ahead and compute the appropriate Gromov-Witten invariant, maybe I should distinguish these. This is the hyperplane on my linearized moduli space, and H is the hyperplane class on P1, on P4, or on the quintic. That if we want to go ahead and calculate this this function, this will translate into linearized theory as this operator H cubed. We'll have three of them. And we go ahead and work that out. Trivially is 5 to the 5d plus 1. So that the full Yukawa coupling is then a sum over each of these, which is the sum of 5 to the 5d plus 1 q to the d, which sums over as 5 over 1 minus 5 to the fifth q. Okay, so back when this computation was done in the days when mathematicians were more familiar with Hodge theory than with quantum cohomology, is that this was worked out by Hodge theory as the normalized Yukawa coupling of the mirror quintic family. So the point is that based on our experience with mirror symmetry and the later proof of mirror symmetry, we expect that the computations in the linearized theory are directly related to the computations in the theory that we really care about with a change of coordinates. So this corresponds to the algebraic coordinate in the mirror theory rather than the Kähler coordinate in the theory that we're ultimately interested in. So I'm just giving this example not because we're not going to be using these techniques, but just to remind you about this linearized theory that I will be using and why it's expected that the computations that we compute in the linearized theory will be essentially the same as the computations that we're ultimately interested in that are going to be much harder to compute and the theory is still under development. Okay, so with that as background, are there any questions? Yes. Yes, yes, yes. This is again. I am by confession suppressing all physics, but inviting comments. So thank you. Yeah, this is not a math proof. Also, it first came inspired by physics before the proof of mirror symmetry, certainly. Okay. So now let's see what changes and what stays the same in our 0-2 theories. So now let's add E is a holomorphic or algebraic rank R bundle. And I'm going to assume very little about this. I'm going to assume that C1 of E is equal to C1 of X. And this is done, as Alan mentioned, because this is needed to go ahead and make the theory resemble a topological theory. And then there's an anomaly cancellation condition that C2 of E equals C2 of x. And we'll see that there's a fairly simple Riemann-Roch calculation not surprisingly, tells us that Riemann-Roch calculations done for the tangent bundle are going to be very similar to Riemann-Roch calculations done for E. So that in the geometric aspect of this, this assumption is going to be natural. And the observables in our, well, I guess I haven't said the name yet since it was said yesterday, but I should say it again. The observables of the half-twisted 0-2 theory with this data include, there are others too, but the ones I'm going to study are cohomology classes in HQ of wedge P of E dual. So let me just make the obvious remark to go ahead and compare to the case we already know so we see what's the same and what's a little different. In the case of the tangent bundle itself, then this space is just the PQ Dolbeau cohomology of X, and since this is Kähler, we see that if we add all these up, we do get the full Dirac cohomology, which is familiar from the A model. So one point is I can imagine it would be easy to get confused seeing things like this and D bar operators and think that we're talking about a generalization of the B model, but remember this is half twisted. So the unusual way of describing the Dirac cohomology in this form is a figment of just how we've done only part of the twisting. If we do the full twisting, it more naturally arranges itself as the usual Dirac cohomology that you're more familiar with in the context of the A model. X is complex and projective actually, but I think this should work for Kähler. The only reason I'm not going to assume that is just because I want to just quote some machinery about virtual fundamental class that's a little bit clearer in algebraic setting. But this should be true more generally for Kähler, I think. So now let's go ahead and take this and see what our correlation function should be. We want to go ahead and compute correlation functions, and I'm going to write them this way because one thing that we have in these 0-2 theories is for now, at least I just want to emphasize that gravity is turned off. So gravity, this is 2D topological gravity is turned off. In other words, that sigma tilde is a fixed world sheet with a fixed set of marked points. So we're not integrating over the positions of the points. We're looking at a fixed complex structure. So for example, for 3 points on P1, like computing Yukawa couplings, this doesn't matter. It's the same thing. Okay, so we're defining invariance for a fixed complex structure, fixed position of these marked points for now. And the condition is that if we view if we just give indices to these, the conditions that we have to have from the fermions that Alan talked about yesterday is that we're supposed to get an invariant if the sum of the qi is equal to c1 of x dot beta plus n times 1 minus genus, and the sum of the pi is c1 dot beta plus r times 1 minus the genus, where r is the rank of the bundle. So these are the conditions that we need for these invariants. So to turn off gravity, we would take our projection map to the moduli space of marked pointed curves, pointed curves. And what this is the map that forgets the map and contracts the unstable components. So N and R, so N is the dimension of X, and R is the rank of the bundle. This N over here is K, thank you. Yeah, this is one of the biggest worries I have in this talk, is that I was going to call right there. That I was going to do that, so we had N in the paper, and I've always used N my whole life for the number of marked points. So. Okay. I'm sure I will do it again, and I'm sure you'll catch me again. Thank you. Okay. So here are our fixed pointed curve is sigma bar. So what we would do is that let's review if we wanted to do a Gromov invariant. So a Gromov-Witten invariant with gravity turned off, for example, is I can go ahead and define an invariant. Let's say if I had ordinary Durham cohomology classes. What I could do is I could simply integrate over the virtual moduli cycle of the pullback of the homology class at this point times the product of the pullback of the evaluation maps. And notice that this is dimensionally consistent with what we're looking for, because what's the degree of this class? The degree of this class, this has degree 3g minus 3 plus k, because that's the class of a point in the space of this dimension. And this has the sum of the PIs. So in this case, that my classes are type PP, so P's and Q's are the same. In this example, N is equal to R, which is just the wish of everybody who's careless about mixing up letters and notation. So they're all the same. And then we want to know that this is equal to C1 times beta plus N minus 3 times 1 minus G plus K. And what we see is that the 3G minus 3 plus K cancels out, and we get exactly this formula. So this condition is, there are many other simple ways to see this, but I'm just giving a computational tool. You can just see this from the computation. So this is the right condition. So in general, the proposal would be to go ahead and compute for a general bundle the invariant we'd look for is to be some integration over the virtual moduli class times the pullback of this class, caps some integrand, depending on these, where the goal is to work this out. And that's what I'll do in the rest of this talk, is to work this out. But one warning here. Is that if I do the integration over the fermions in the string theory calculation, I don't quite get that. I almost get that. What I really get is that the string theory calculation looks like the way that you work out the virtual fundamental class in the way Berend and Fanteke work out the virtual fundamental class. Is that they look at the forgetful map from the moduli space of stable maps to the Artin stack of uncontracted, not necessarily stable curves. And the virtual class of this is roughly given, it's just, I'll just write it informally, it's just the H1 of the pullback of the tangent bundle, is what determines the obstruction theory, and it's a very simple obstruction theory. The fermion calculation gives you exactly this. What we're doing is we're further contracting to here, and it's not clear that the computations agree if there are bubbled components. They may, but that's, again, like I confess, this talk in a sense is not ready for prime time, and I just haven't proven this, so I'm not going to assert it. So to be cautious, and thereby correct, let me assume, so this is going to be a big assumption, let's assume that this map contracts no components. And this is a very big assumption. It's almost never satisfied in practice, but will happen much more, it'll be much more common to satisfy in the linearized theory anyway. Okay. So this would happen, for example, in genus 0, X is a homogeneous space, e.g. projective space, and beta is an edge of the Mori cone. And it's it's much more general in the linearized theory. Right. You can. Do you want to ask the question again so they can hear it on the web?
Yeah. Well, my comments say. Instead, inserting a class rho star sigma total, you can take a set theoretical preimage of sigma total in stable mind module space. Mm-hmm. Then doing virtual fundamental cycle for the subscheme.
Yeah. Right. So that's what I'm saying is that you could go ahead and you can do that instead. You can bubble off a P1 and have a map from here. And all I'm saying is that yes, you can define this class as mathematics, but I'm only able to convince myself that this matches what physics says to do in this case.
Yeah, but my comment is that if you take a set theoretical preimage of sigma total,
yes,
as a subset of a stable mind module space,
yes,
then integrate over virtual fundamental cycle of that subset.
Yes,
that potentially could be different from the integral you wrote up there.
It could be, but that space is not compact.
It is compact.
I don't understand what you're saying.
So you have this map, right? Stable mind module space of MGK bar.
Okay.
You take a set theoretical preimage of sigma total. That is some kind of subscheme of the MGK bar. Then you can also construct virtual fundamental cycle for that object.
I'm sorry.
What
I'm understanding you to say is not compact. So you sound equally confident that what you're saying is compact. So maybe you can tell me later. Is that I don't understand what you're saying? Okay. Thanks. Okay. So So what we want to do is from here we want to compute what this class is. You'll have to define it under these assumptions and a few more, and then do the computation. So let me just call the space of maps with the fixed domain or bubbled components. Oh, this right. Okay. Well, this is good. Okay. Then we're agreeing, and then I'll get. Okay. Good. So this is a nice compact space, but the problem is that the virtual fundamental class that you would compute from mathematics is not clear to me to agree with what the physics computation says to do at the bubble components. It should be okay, but I just don't have an argument. So I want to just confess that I don't have an argument that this matches the physics in that case. So let's go ahead and take that space, and from there we want to do this computation. And so we can do this by the usual method. We find the stable. We find the universal curve. We have k canonical sections of this universal curve, and we have a universal map. Okay, and now our assumption implies that if we take r pi star alpha star tx is the virtual tangent bundle. Of this moduli space. And because without those components, the deformation theory is just given by the cohomology of the pullback of the tangent bundle. But we also have that r pi star alpha star e is computed the same way. If we go ahead and compute this or this, we can do it by a Grothendieck-Riemann-Roch calculation. And if we want to do this, and we want to compute the something in codimension 1, it only involves classes in codimension 2 up here. And our assumption says that the codimension 2 classes are exactly the same. So if we go ahead and calculate the Chern classes, these are equal. Which is equal to the, so this is the virtual anti-canonical bundle. Okay, so this is one simple but useful result in making sense of the mathematics, and this is very, very different from the way that we compute correlation functions Gromov-Witten theory. So now let's use this to go ahead and easily do this. Let me just write this as minus k m sigma tilde bar virtual. So let me define now f to be pi star alpha star e. And let's, for simplicity, let's assume that r1 pi star alpha star e is 0. And for example, this will happen. This is okay if, for example, r1 pi star alpha star tx is 0. So the case of convex manifolds, gen is 0. And e is a small deformation of tx, the conclusion following by semi-continuity. So let's assume that. So let me assume this. Then we have maps. If we take the cohomology of E, the cohomology cluster on E dual, we can map this. We can pull it back to the space of maps. By the section. And then we want to go ahead and relate this to f. So to do that, we have evaluation maps where we take f, we'll go to si star alpha star e. So f are global sections along the fiber. We just evaluate that section along one point. So these are the evaluation maps. And now we can take that by transposing this map, dualizing this map. And this gives a map which I will call psi. Okay, operators. So in string theory language, what we're doing is we're taking these operators and pulling them back to the worldsheet module, the instance on moduli space. But here's a mathematical definition of this map. So then to go ahead and what the correlation functions come out to be then, translating into mathematics, is we take this virtual fundamental class and pull back to fixed complex structure, and now we go ahead and cup this with the product of psi of gamma I. So this is the integrand that we were looking for. And now this is a very different kind of integrand than we had in Gromov-Witten theory. This is not a cycle class, it's something analytic. In particular, it need not be a rational number for any reason. And so to see what this is, our condition on the dimension says that this lies in Hn, where n is the expected dimension of the moduli space. On this moduli space in wedge R, where R is the virtual rank of the pullback module. And let me just drop virtual subscripts here just to not mess the idea. We need to put virtuals on everything. This we've just seen that this bundle, the determinant of F, in our assumption, this is F. The determinant of F is anti-canonical, so the determinant of F dual is canonical. So this is canonical, and the canonical I can write is omega n. So at the end of the day, all our assumptions say that we get a class in H and n of m bar, and we know how to integrate that. So that's the definition. We can integrate, for example, just by, I guess in practice, I like to think of this as a trace map because that's how we do this for computational purposes. So it's a trace map or an integral along the moduli space, and this is our invariant. Are there any questions? Because I'm integrating I'm taking something in, I'm computing a cohomology class. So the question was, why isn't this a rational number? Is because this is not a cycle class, it's a cohomology class. And in fact, as we'll see, we're going to have deformations of the tangent bundle where the deformation is a holomorphic variation, so a holomorphic non-constant variation, and these numbers are going to be just in computations, they won't be rational numbers. But so at the end of the day, we're computing these cohomology groups, cohomology groups like this, don't have any integral structure at all. And we're taking, there's nothing integral about them. We're taking cup product and things like that. It's not like, this used to be the Dolbeau cohomology of the moduli space. And because in the 2-2 theory, these combine to have a real structure, we were only intersecting real classes on the, or rational classes on the moduli space of maps. Here in the half-twisted theory, we're doing half of that. We're just doing computations in a moduli, in some sheaf cohomology, which has nothing integer about it. But anyhow, we'll just compute and we'll see they're not rational. So
we need some assumption on E, so the variation, if you deform the tangent bundle, we need some assumption on E for it to be topological.
Right, there are some, so again, we haven't proven to a mathematician's satisfaction that this theory is topological. So let me just say with our current arguments or evidence is that we suspect that this may not be topological in general. We don't know. We just don't know. We don't have any examples where it's not. But the what seems to be the case is that the computations one would want to do seem to be more tractable if the rank of R1 pi star alpha star E is equal to the rank of R1 pi star alpha star tangent bundle. That's not a proof, but that's just circumstantial evidence that just showed up just in what makes the computations work and what makes them not work. So here, notice if I'm assuming both of these things, I'm actually having a smooth moduli space. I don't have anything virtual about this, and I do have this assumption that everything seems to work. Question?
Seems to me you actually need to have a stronger requirement. This top weight product F star is holomorphically the anti-canonical bound moduli space, rather than just have the same first trend class.
So when I say first trend class, I guess I'm speaking loosely. So if I'm thinking of first trend class as being in the Chow ring rather than in cohomology, so I do want it to be holomorphically the same. I want the line bundles to be the same, and that can be preserved in the Riemann-Roch calculation also. So that's what I was meaning by trend class. Thanks for clarifying that. Other questions? Okay. So the next part of the talk is about how to actually compute these things. And so I understand Alan Adams is trying to do computations using toric methods, and I'm trying to do something different. What you could imagine is if you have a situation where X is toric and E is a T-invariant bundle, then there are localization methods that could be explored. So we weren't trying to do that because the generic deformation we expect to be very non-toric, and we want to be able to compute all of those. So what we want to do is to have non-toric computational methods. So let me do the example that we heard about yesterday, which is to take P1 times P1. And I'll do this linearized. And the tangent bundle of P1 times P1 has a presentation with obvious notation. Here's the presentation of the tangent bundle. So if we want to go ahead and deform the tangent bundle, one way to do that is you can check that you can deform the maps and get a non-isomorphic bundle. So the deformation that they used is given in coordinates by just, if these were homogeneous coordinates on the first P1 and these were homogeneous coordinates on the second P1, if I had put zeros there, I would exactly get the tangent bundle. Instead, they use constants, epsilon 1 and epsilon 2, as parameters. And this way, we replace this by a bundle E. This is still we still get O squared as a trivial rank 2 subbundle in a different way, and we get some smoothly varying complex structure on this quotient bundle. And now we want to go ahead and do this computation in the linearized version. So I think it's best to just not get bogged down in details of computation. So maybe I'll just stick to one part of the computation, try to emphasize ideas rather than details. So let's look at the degree 1, 0. So let's just look at the degree 1, 0 computation. And we want to go ahead and compute correlation functions here. So first, what are the observables? If we dualize this sequence and use from the long exact sequence, we see that H naught of O squared is isomorphic by the co-boundary map to H1 of E star. So we have two observables, just like the two H1 classes, the two H2 classes that we have on P1 times P1. So these are the deformations of the two hybrid plane classes of P1 times P1. So what we should expect is that if we compute the correlation functions of these, they should be deformations of the usual correlation functions of P1 times P1. And in fact, that turns out to be the case. So how do we compute this? Now we need the instanton moduli space. So So here, this is the same as the linear sigma model moduli space of Morris and Plesser in this example. And we see that the moduli space in degree 1, 0 is simply P3 times P1. So these are given by pairs of, so a degree 1 map to P1 is simply a pair of linear functions. So that's a P3. And this is simply just an ordinary point of P1, because it's constant on the second vector, so maps to a point, so that's just the usual P1. And the coordinates is it's convenient. Well, I guess let me just, since I'm not going to go through the calculation anyway, I won't confuse notation. Let me just call the coordinates, I guess I'm going to confuse notation this way. So let me call the coordinates, let's say, beta 0, beta 1, beta 2, beta 3, and gamma 0, gamma 1 will be the homogeneous coordinates. So now we want to go ahead and compute the bundle F, which is a bundle on P3 times P1. And now, taking the same definitions I had now, but just running it through the linear sigma model instead of Gromov-Witten nonlinear sigma model moduli space, what we see is that we have, again, a presentation. So in the linear sigma model, you have there are identifications between the cohomology of the space and the cohomology of the moduli space, which give us the same bundle structure, but we have to count how many sections there are, and there are 4 of these and 2 of those. And F is the co-kernel of a map like that. So not only do we get a bundle F, but we get a presentation of the bundle F. And one thing I should point out is that the linear sigma model, the 0-2 linear sigma model, is not an invariant of bundles. This is one thing that just confused me until I thought about it. I was getting contradictions in trying to develop this theory. It's not a theory of bundles. It's a theory of bundles together with their presentations. So that's one thing to worry about in the linearized theory. So we may be including some extra information. So in other words, we may be taking different changes of coordinates and comparing to the original nonlinear theory. So that's just a warning to be aware of, so that it doesn't fool more people than me.
Do you mean a resolution by presentation?
Say again?
By presentation, do you mean the resolution?
I mean a resolution. So here, so the presentation of the original bundle E, of course, doesn't affect the theory that we really want to know about. But what we do is that the bundle F that we get in this space does depend not on E, but it depends on E in its presentation. Because in fact, it's constructed from the presentation in the linear theory.
Is it coincidence that these presentations look similar?
It's not an accident that they look similar. That's part of the construction. So I'm using here an isomorphism between the cohomology of P1 times P1, let's say with H2, is isomorphic to H2 of this moduli space. So it's this isomorphism that's used to identify those bundles. And then in toric language, there's a very simple way to go ahead and say that that works much more generally. Okay, so then in doing this by the same reason, we see that H1 of F dual comes from the co-boundary map here. So this is also C2, but now we have psi computed for us for free. So, not surprisingly, the computations in the linear theory are much easier. So let's look at this sequence. We now have a mapping from H naught of O squared to H naught to H1 of E dual. This is an isomorphism. We also have H naught of O squared canonically identified by construction of how this was constructed with the original H naught of O squared. So not just isomorphic, but equal. And then we have this map. So by composition, we have our mapping psi. Okay. We also have, from the anomaly cancellation, just run through the linear sigma model theory. It's the same proof, but now, rather than just proving it in that context, if I take the determinant of F dual, this is in fact O of minus 4 minus 2, which as it must be is the canonical bundle of P3 times P1. So you can state and prove a theorem in the linear sigma model context also. I'll omit that because it's easier. So then what we want to compute then is if we have, suppose we have four classes in H1 of E dual, and then if we want to go ahead and compute gamma 1 to gamma 4 in this degree 1, 0 sector for any fixed complex structure, I'll omit the sigma tilde, anyone will work and give the same answer, is that this is then equal to the integral of psi 1 of psi of gamma 1 to psi of gamma 4 on P3 times P1, which now is interpreted as an element of H4 of wedge 4 F star, which is H4 of omega 4 on P3 times P1, which is isomorphic to C. Okay. And the amazing thing is that this is actually can be computed. So, maybe not amazing, but I just threw up my hands for a while because, but of course it's very, very simple. We just have to forget about Gromov-Witten theory completely and use a different method like check cohomology. And then it's very simple. Okay, so if you want to go ahead and use check cohomology, this is now a diagram chase, more or less. So for example, let's say we have, let me give part of the exact sequence for the dual. So let's say we want to work with this. The way that we do this is by taking a check open cover, where I'll let uij be the set of all points in P3 times P1. I guess I called them beta and gamma, didn't I? Well, I don't know why I called them beta, but I did. Beta I and gamma j. I think I did it so I wouldn't conflict with alpha, so I conflicted with something else, fine. So these are the set of all beta and gamma such that beta I is not zero and gamma j is not zero. So this is some check open cover. We can do this for toric varieties as well. As you'll see soon, you don't want to do this by hand, but it's straightforward to do by computer. And then what we can do is we want to go ahead and take to get our fundamental basis, we just take our basis vectors and do this. So we just do a diagram chase. Is that what we have to do is we'd have to lift this to this space. So maybe I should write this out above. So if we want to go ahead and compute a coboundary by a diagram chase, we take our sections here and we lift to here. But this map is computed by the original map that was used to deform the tangent bundle, so we have components like beta 1 here, et cetera. So for example, if beta 1 is not 0, we can go ahead and lift this section to 1 over beta 1 here, which is a nice well-defined section. So there's no problem. This check cover is perfectly well adapted to computing a coboundary in cohomology. So we just do the computation, we go ahead and compute this, and of course we get this in a way that's maybe not too recognizable, but the thing to remember is that this is a subbundle of that, and this we know quite well. So at the end of the day, when we then compute cut products, we know that the answer is supposed to be in wedge 4 of F star, but we know that this is a rank 1 subbundle of wedge 4 of this. which is O of minus 4, 0, plus 8. Oh, so the preceding numbers are, of course, exponents, plus 6, O of minus 2, minus 2. So when we go ahead and do the cut product calculation, it's easiest just to go ahead and realize the answer as some cohomology, some check class inside the space that we can recognize. But what we know is we know that this is O of minus 4 minus 2. So what you have to do first is just compute this map. So you just compute this once. The calculation is easily done here. At the end of the day, you know what subbundle you're in, so rather than having to compute 15 components, you just compute one. And that tells you what the computation is right in here. So that's a way to simplify computation by a factor of 15, or in general, you know, will always be the rank, the appropriate rank of the appropriate wedge power of the bundle that you have. So you always just have to look at one component of this when you go ahead and refer the computation to the toric data that you already know what that is. So what we get is an explicit class. You get an explicit check class inside O of minus 4 minus 2. And then the last step of the computation, which is where I just ran out of patience and needed help from this. This is where Doug and Christy finished this off. So Eric and I had used some general position assumptions to do enough of the computations by hand with some simplifying tricks to go ahead and compute the computation, compute some correlation functions and show that it matched with the prediction, the mirror prediction. Duncan just finished this off yesterday by computing this trace map and completing the calculation. So I guess what I can say the result is. Maybe I need more notation. So let me just say that that this plus a similar degree 0-1 computation matches the full quantum product of this half-twisted ring by Adams, Bailey, and Seti. Exactly. And when I say exactly, I mean up to a factor, which is, so factors in computing correlation functions are completely harmless because it's just when you compute a correlation function, they have to be normalized anyway. But on the nose, every single correlation function, hits with all coefficients on the nose. And one thing I want to say is that, just for an example, a four-point function turns out to be computed to be epsilon 1 minus epsilon 2 to the cubed, for example, in the 0, 1 thing. For an appropriate gamma, I won't write down. It would take more notation to just say what this is. But just to give an example of what has to be checked, there are many. The epsilons were the deformation parameters. So these are not just numbers. They're functions of the moduli. And clearly, this is not a rational number. So this check is now as of yesterday complete, and I'll stop there.
Questions, please.
Okay. So in this example, so the question was, do you get a quantum cohomology ring? And what I say is that in this example, the correlation functions that we computed are exactly derived from the ring structure of their calculation. So what we haven't gone and computed 3-point functions, which we would need to do to go ahead and check the ring structure. So again, by confession, this talk is, from a mathematician's perspective, is not really ready for prime time. There's more work to be done, even on this example. But the four-point functions in degrees in various degrees checked completely. Questions? I'll let the mic come for posterity.
Is any thought how to do this without assumption of convexity assumption?
Without the convexity assumption, yes. Uh-huh. So there, the convexity assumption was the convexity assumption that I don't need is the one just for the moduli space for doing the computation on TX. So if you there, the Riemann-Roch calculation is virtual. So what that means is that we can go ahead and we can take a form on the we end up computing a form that we're integrating over some virtual cycle. So this would be a form on the full moduli space that might have excess dimension. It'd be some NN form on this moduli space. And we could take that and intersect that with the virtual cycle. So that part is OK. The part that's not OK is if we have when R1 pi star of F, R1 pi star alpha star of F, is that there, in doing the path integral, that there's a term involving curvature and four fermions in all of these theories. And then the issue is how to go ahead and interpret it as mathematics. And it clearly involves all the right data. It involves R1 pi star F, just all the bundles that we've had, and puts both of them together. But it doesn't arrange itself into any familiar mathematical computation. I mean, at the end of the day, if I could guess the right mathematical formulation, then there would be some deep conjecture about some analytic expression for some geometric invariant. But I can't guess what that is yet.
Could you say again why this invariants depend on the presentation of the vector bundle?
Yeah. So the invariants, it's only the linearized invariants. So the linearized invariants depend on the presentation of the vector bundle because in defining the linearized theory, that what we're doing is that the bundle F depends on the presentation of V. So for example, just to give a silly example, let's take P1. If we take P1 and take the tangent bundle of P1, and if we wanted to look at this into degree one moduli space, which is now P3, what we would get is we would get 0 to O to O of 1 to the 4th to TP3. But now instead, suppose that we said, well, TP1, that's just O of 2. So if I would go ahead and now take O of 2 and use the presentation of O of 2 by O of 2, what I would simply get here for the bundle is no presentation. I would just get O of 2 cubed instead of TP3. So it's a different bundle. And this is a silly example because by virtue of being dimension 1, we don't really have a C2. So in fact, these things don't even have the same first term class. But I can easily just modify this example to go ahead and cook up another one, which will have the same churn classes, but I will definitely get two different bundles. So that's what it is.
But so you can match this computation with one on the graph space?
I haven't tried to do that yet.
Oh.
I mean, so.
Okay. So, yeah. But there presumably it shouldn't depend on presentation, right?
Yeah, so if you go ahead and have something that you can pull back to the graph space, that would be a proof that the results would not depend on the presentation. The form of the computation would still be different, but then mathematics could unify that and prove a deep theorem, which is not obvious at all from the physics. But what is obvious from the physics, is, as Dave pointed out at the beginning, is that these linear theories are connected to the original theory for reasons of how they flow together, but we don't see that in mathematics. But that's one way to try to prove that.
Anybody else? Let's thank the speaker again. Next talk at noon. At 11:50. 15 minutes break.